Brian Waddle is with us now. Evening, Brian.
Karen, how are you?
Good, thank you. How's your week been?
It's been dominated by television. There's so much sport that you have to watch, you want to watch, you need to watch, or you just watch because you've got nothing else to do,
Yes.
and it takes up far too much of your time. But I'm justifying it because I say I've got to get ready for Monday night on national radio.
Very good. And are you doing any sort of exercises while you're on the couch there?
Oh, late in the afternoon, the arms get a fair bit of a workout, both the forearms and the wrists. And I've walked to the letterbox twice.
Good. See, England are
Oh, and I did the lawns.
you did the lawns, right, in between watching television and the rain.
When the games were off,
Yeah, I see that England are edging a little closer in the football, ever so close now.
I think they gave an indication that they've got a good chance of going a little bit further. Of course, they're going to be tested by France in the next round. They're the defending champions, and they too were impressive. You get to a stage in the competition, the last 16, when it becomes knockout, where the good sides really have to deliver. And so far, we've seen England deliver, we've seen France deliver. And tomorrow, it's going to be interesting to see whether Japan can continue the way they did in the preliminary round because they were the top of the pool. They actually beat Argentina to the top of that pool. And so they've got a game against Croatia, and that will be a test for them. But the sad fact, of course, is that some good sides have dipped out. Belgium, ranked number two in the world, they weren't up to it in the preliminary stages. Germany, too, went out, but of course, there was a major controversy around their departure, and that has sort of opened up the wounds of those people who don't like technology and sport. And football has been one sport where they don't like technology, though they would much rather leave it to the referee or the umpire. I prefer to get the right result if you can, but I don't think they got the right result in the game that Germany were dipped out.
What's the argument against it? Surely you'd want to be able to see it back. Why not?
I think it is something that is important, and there's so much money around sport these days. And of course, betting on sport too is quite significant, and people want to be assured that if they're going to invest money betting, it's not everybody's cup of tea, but they want to see the right result. And if there is an element of controversy, as there was in this case, then it takes the what they call the VAR. I know it as the DRS. That's the cricket terminology. This is the VAR. And
What does that
I'm not
mean?
sure they actually got it right. I don't know what it means, but I think it's something to do with video
Oh, I see.
a replay.
Right. Yep, that sounds
I
right.
presume. DRS. Yeah, DRS stands for the same sort of thing, replay system. It did create a lot of controversy. And I've got to say, I'm on the side of those who think the cameras got it wrong. They make a decision, they go with that. And that's how the competition advances. Not that I'm a great fan of Germany, but they are a good side and they have had a strong history in the World Cup over a long period of time. They've won it in the past, it's not theirs this time, and there's some interesting games to come. While all those who've been beaten in the first round of matches pack their bags, get on their plane, and go home.
They've gone home. When you saw, I didn't see that. I haven't watched any of it actually, but I didn't see that. What happened in the Germany game where the cameras got it wrong?
Well, what happened was the ball went over the back line. Now, if the ball goes over the back line, it is regarded as out. But the whole ball, the entire ball, must go over. So if it's on the line, it regarded as being in. What happened was one of the Japanese players chased it to the back line and managed to drag it back in front of goal, and a goal was scored, and it was the goal that probably stood in the way of Japan advancing, and they have made countless replays of it, and I still don't believe it was on the line. You can see the grass between the ball and the line. There will be people out there listening to this who will totally disagree with me, and they probably know more about football than I know, but I see this happen time and time again in cricket where, you know, the DRS comes into play. There's somebody sitting watching a television replay. They see something totally different to what I see, and that's the decision that stands. The end result is you've got to take the umpire's call. You've got to take the decision. Mm. You can't complain, and certainly Germany complained, but no one wanted to listen to them.
Oh, I see your point. Okay, so there's England, France, Japan, Croatia. Who else is playing? Who are the final eight?
Well, at the moment, there's still four more games to be played.
Oh, yeah.
So England and France have gone through. Netherlands and Argentina, who beat Australia, have gone through. And then there are four more games, two tomorrow, and that's the one that's going to be really interesting, although I don't think I'll be up at 4 o'clock in the morning to watch that one. That's Japan against Croatia. I might watch the final stages in preparation for watching Brazil play South Korea. So two of those four sides will be through. And then there's Morocco against Spain and Portugal against Switzerland. And as I see it, Croatia, Brazil, Spain and Switzerland are my picks to go through. You know, because everybody's got these office sweeps and there's these competitions that you can enter into. But, you know, the business end of the competition sorts the men from the boys, and we've seen some very, very good performances. And the one today by England was quite outstanding, along with the French performance. So they're the ones that are going to carry on through.
When's the final, Brian? How many weeks?
I think June next year. They take so long. No, it's around about the let me have a look.
Before Christmas, I've got it written down. I assume.
It's just before Christmas. There you go. Monday, December the 19th. Goodness me. It's close to my birthday. Oh, that's good, yeah. It'll be fun.
What day's your birthday?
It'll be over by Christmas. Oh, I'm not telling.
Come on.
No.
All right, fair enough.
December. I'm Sagittarius.
Okay. Well, I have no idea when that begins and ends, but fair enough.
Neither do I. I just know I'm Sagittarius.
Okay. But the Rugby Awards this week, and got to be the Black Ferns, doesn't it?
Well, you know, there was a time when it would be thought totally impossible that a woman or a women's team would win a major rugby award, but such has been the change in the sport, the acceptance of the women's game and the way they're playing, they would be hard to go past in terms of the major awards. There are team awards, there are individual. I think they've got about 17 or 18 different awards, but I would imagine that the team award would have to go to the Black Ferns. I mean, they won a World Cup and they did it against the odds, against the side that hadn't lost in something like 32 games, I think it was. You know, England were far and away the punter's choice for winning that, but the Black Ferns did it, and they did it in style. And I think that's the great thing about it all. It's not the fact that they were winners, but they weren't what I would normally call arrogant, ugly winners. They were smiling all the time. They had a good attitude. They were able to mix and mingle with the public. People say sometimes the All Blacks don't do that. But, I mean, I don't see a lot of that. But I just thought the way the public accepted them and the way they portrayed themselves and the performances that the individuals gave was a credit to any sports people. And there'll also be awards for individuals. I would imagine that Rahi Dumont will probably be the women's winner. She's the captain of the side, but there's some really good competition there. Stacey Fleuler had a good competition. There's quite a lot of them had that. The sad fact, I suppose, from the men's point of view, and people who like the men's form of the game, is that somebody like Adi Savia will probably miss out on the the major award, where in other years he would romp home. And I'm sure he will be the player of the year from the men's competition. But there's no doubt that the dominant features of this year have been the Black Ferns and the impressive showing they have given.
Where is that being held? In Auckland, is it?
Well, I think it is. I think it's being done on television. They used to have a great big program at Sky City or
think it is.
That,
yeah, I think it is at Sky City. I've just got it here, actually. It's going to be on Sky Sport and Prime TV, 8th of December at 8:30.
Yeah, Thursday night, yeah. And, that, I suppose, gives it wider coverage that, people can get up and make their speech and they can all hug and kiss each other as winners do these days. They're
maybe with
not
masks
given
on.
To that many. Yeah, well, one would hope so. I mean, the bug is going around everywhere. But, I look at the soccer players. I don't know if you may or may not have seen them, but, some of their celebrations are absolutely excessive. You know, at the risk of being sort of regarded as a dinosaur, I think that some of the celebrations and the time it takes to, everybody has to mess around with the goal scorer's hair, and then they have to have a little hug and kiss and head bump and all those, sorts of things that, when I played sport, we just shook hands and got on with the game. But now you have to have a sort of, I think it's Oscar-winning performances, and there'll be an Oscar somewhere out of the World Cup. Certainly better not be out of the Rugby Awards. Yeah, I've given my dinosaur rant.
Why do you think Ardie Sevilla, he's up for All Blacks Player of the Year. Why do you think he might not get that?
Oh, I just think he'll be outdone by one of the women.
But they're not in there.
He'll have the men's award, but the overall award.
Oh, I see. Right, there's
which
a big
is
one,
for
is it?
The, yeah, there's an overall award, which is the Tremaine Trophy, which basically is named after the former All Black, Blake Tremaine. And
I see. Right.
I imagine that one of the Black Ferns will get there, and it may well be the captain. I don't think they'll give that to Wayne Smith, who'll be the coach of the year without doubt, because he was the man that took them from where they were. 12 months ago, they were out the back door against the England side that they beat, and they weren't given much chance of performing at this World Cup. But the work that he and Graham Henry and many of the other coaches that they had just made a mockery of all that, and that's why I think we deserve to celebrate them, and they will deserve to celebrate as well.
I think it'll just be a nice handshake. It'll be a handshake. There'll be no hair ruffling, no touching. Don't worry.
No, well, it's not a good thing.
Yes, it is. Okay, White Ferns.
Oh, okay.
That's all right. Why not? A little bit of,
Yeah, well, that's fine, I suppose.
Ruffling of the hair and leaping about.
Yeah. Can't do that to me.
So the White Ferns, the cricketers, how are they going?
Yep. They're in pretty good nick at the moment. They didn't have a very good World Cup, which was, back earlier this year, the Women's World Cup. But they're preparing. They've got a new coach. They are preparing for, ultimately, a T20 World Championship in South Africa in February or March. And they've got Bangladesh out here playing a series. Bangladesh aren't the strongest opposition, but you've still got to play what you come up against. And to my mind, if you're going to prove yourself, you've got to then be ruthless in your performance and be consistent. And so far, they've won two games quite comfortably. They have been consistent. And I think that they are starting to show what we want to see from the women's team, because there's some quality players in there. You look at the New Zealand players who play in international competitions, Sophie Devine, Susie Bates, Amelia Kerr, and Lea Tahuhu, and a number of them. I mean, they are outstanding cricketers. And it was a surprise that they didn't perform to the extent that we expected them when it was the World T20. But they're back in good form. The new coach is doing an excellent job with them, and it's quite encouraging because I, for one, had been a little bit critical of them with some of the selections in previous years, but I think that they have gone for experienced players rather than. It's all very well to have development players and plenty of potential. As I always say, if you've got potential, you've also got to have performance with it, and it hasn't always been the case. So it's good to see them starting to deliver on much of the potential and some of the skill they've got. That's a marvellous turnaround from them. Good signs.
On the subject of coaching, Brendan McCullum, been coaching England.
Yeah, and doing a pretty good job. He's shown the same tactics and skills that he had as a captain of New Zealand and as a coach in areas outside New Zealand, because he does a lot of coaching in the IPL in India. But he's taken that aggressive kind of style, doesn't necessarily go with the straightforward, commonplace sorts of things. He's prepared to experiment a little bit. And with another New Zealander, of course, while he calls himself English, Ben Stokes, he's a New Zealander, born here, Christchurch man, initially, played a bit of cricket in Wellington as a schoolboy. And then when his father went overseas to coach league in England, of course, he went over with the family. I think he was about 12, 13, something along those lines. But now he's the captain of England, and they've had a major turnaround. It's interesting, though, that they're playing in Pakistan. I've got to say that it's a match that hasn't really grabbed my attention, because the pitch is just too one-sided, all in favour of batting. And I prefer myself to see a good contest. I like to see the bowlers get a little bit of encouragement. It may well change there. Right now, I think they're heading towards the final session in Rawalpindi, which brings back a lot of memories for me back in the 80s when I went over there with the New Zealand cricket team. And it could well turn out as a win for England, but Pakistan are battling through. A lot of runs have been scored, and that to me suggests that it's a batting pitch. We call it State Highway 1 if they turn out a pitch like that in New Zealand.
How do you turn out a pitch like that? You know, what are you doing to make it a batting game?
It's a complicated thing, and I used to prepare pitches at college level for my son when he was playing in the first 11, and it's not an easy thing to do. But of course, the expertise and the fixtures that they have to put pitches together are quite different than what I would have done at the local college. But this pitch is just devoid of grass. It's basically a rolled mud, and it's firm and it's holding together, and those are the criteria for batsmen. You know, they like the ball that comes to the bat at a nice gentle pace, doesn't bounce too much, doesn't deviate on the pitch. It's swinging a little bit, but it's so slow that all the batsmen have survived. I mean, I give you the record of the test. England batted first and scored 657, generally unheard of, but the pace that they did it at was quite fantastic. And Pakistan batted second and scored 579, so there was sort of only 80 runs between them. And then they get to the last day, there's a declaration, and that sets up for a victory. But I find that a little bit contrived. I'd like to see, you know, a greater challenge for all players. To me, top-level sport is about a contest of skills, whether it be football, whether it be rugby, whether it be cricket. You know, you've got to see all the best skills on show. And sometimes when pitches are like this, the best skills aren't on show.
Mm. All right, the Black Sox are cooling their heels, I imagine. Gone for a little confab out the back.
Yeah, that was pretty sad. I remember the days when we were the world champions, and the softball names were household names. The coach of this side, Mark Sorensen, you know, you go and say to anybody, you know, who was Mark Sorensen? They would say, well, he's a New Zealand softball player. And there were quite a number of players who were household names by their performance. But you know, I don't see household names amongst the New Zealand side. Yes, they've got some good players, but at home they should have finished better than eighth in a 12-team competition, and that to me is disappointing. There'll be a lot of those players will come through over a period of time. The captain of the side, Cole Evans, had a pretty good tournament, but not good enough consistently. They've got a pitcher who's highly rated, Daniel Chapman. But, you know, I think you have to be a lot more consistent than they were. And consequently finished 8th out of 12. So disappointment. They'll have to go back to the drawing board and read the playbook and see how they go about improving things. And I'm sure Mark Sorensen, who's been part of the game of softball since he was, you know, a baby in naps, because his father was also a very good softball player and coach. So, you know, he's probably still got a lot to offer, but he may have come to the stage where he might stand aside for someone else to do the job.
Mm. Well, it's not a bad thing, though, really, is it? All things considered, to have to go and, you know, rework your approach or your team.
Well, yeah, I mean, that comes along. It's the successful sides generally know how they've been successful. You get to this stage, you have to rethink your selections, how you play the game, training, the skills that are required. I'm afraid that I was never much at softball. We used to play it at primary school. And then you played a thing called T-ball, where you put the ball on top of a tee that was sort of up around about waist height, and then you had to whack it. They didn't have pitches when I was playing, and then you'd run around. It was called rounders, I think. Did you play rounders when you were at school?
Yeah, I did, yeah. Very successfully.
Were you fast?
Not really.
Were you good rounding the
not
bases?
Not very good runner.
I reckon you'd be.
I played indoor basketball. I like that.
Oh, yeah, well, you've got to be pretty pretty slick
nifty
to do that. You've got to be pretty fit.
You've got to be quick. Yeah, that's right.
Were you tall?
No, medium.
No. Yeah, you've got to be tall for that game.
Quick, though.
I found at 4'3", I was too small.
And you didn't grow at all from there. No,
I grew out. That's what always happens, you see.
On a more sober note, Sir Murray Helberg sadly died last week. You must have met him on many occasions.
Sadly, I only met him once. He was sort of around and about at times when I was at functions, and we were talking Sportsman of the Year, of course, because he was the Helberg Awards now, and he was there. But I never got to speak to him once. But, I mean, what you saw of him over the period of his lifetime was the impression that he made on me of a quiet, softly spoken, gentle man, a determined fighter trying to beat the odds all the time. I mean, he had an athletics career that was hampered to a certain extent by a rugby injury and left his arm damaged for when he was an athlete. And I suppose your arms are just as important as your legs when you're running races, and you've got to get some rhythm about you. He was just one of the great contributors, and you know, I remember right back as a very, very young person, 1960, the day that he and Peter Snell won gold medals for New Zealand at the Rome Olympics. I've still got that piece of commentary that was done by the sports editor for Broadcasting Corporation of New Zealand, sort of names changed, but the business is still the same. Lance Cross did the commentary, and it still is in my personal archive because it was a great moment in New Zealand sport. In fact, Murray Helberg was I used to run a few quizzes, and he was one of my trivia questions, and it's interesting, I can tell you the question and you know the answer. What international sportsman was born in Ekitahuna? And people had to try and guess who it was. And it was Murray Helberg, born in Ekitahuna.
Hmm. And went to school. I was talking about him just recently. Went to school in Avondale. Avondale College?
Yeah, in Auckland.
Yeah, in Auckland,
So at an early age, they must have moved up from Eka to Huna. But, it's not a district in New Zealand that you would think that many international sports people have come from in Eka to Huna. But that's where Sir Murray Halberg was born. He died in Auckland. I think he was on Waiheke, wasn't he? Age of 89.
Yes. That's right.
Yeah, just a wonderful sportsman and part of the Arthur Lydiard stable. And I heard something the other day, I don't know how true it is, somebody might well know the answer, was that Lydiard went to the Rome Olympics with Hal Bergensnell. He was their coach, but for some reason wasn't allowed into the stadium or to be near them when they ran their races, and it seemed quite strange. And I've been looking for that piece of information, and I'm still unable to find it, but it seemed quite odd that that might have been the case. But it was delivered in a eulogy or an obituary of some kind to Sir Murray Halberg as being fact, so somebody may know, and somebody may let you know.
Yeah, 2101 is our text number here, or you can email knights@rnz.co.nz if you do know that. Well, thank you very much, Brian, and you can get back to the couch now.
Yes, there's a test match being played in Rawalpindi on State Highway 1.
Right. All right. When are the lawns due again?
I've only just done them. Hopefully in a couple of weeks.
You got to do them before Christmas. All right, we'll talk to you next Monday night. Thank you very much, Brian.
Really, Karen.
Talk to you then. Brian Waddle with Sport